From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carr. I'm with Keon at Alamo Labs. Can we get up for Alamo Labs? Let's freaking go. Keon, how's your week?
It was a good week. It's my first time being in San Antonio, which is cool.
What do you think about it?
I haven't really seen much of it. I've just been in Alamo Labs, but I love Alamo Labs. So
you said just because you've been at, you just because you're just at Alamo Labs?
Yeah, we just went to Alamo Labs. It's not like I did a drone tour of San Antonio. So we just came here.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What do you think of the streets so far? Does it look like normal streets?
It looks like other places I drive in Texas, I guess.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen much. I mean, we're near the stadium here, which I haven't been to. Stadiums are always cool because there's like these huge, massive engineering projects that are kind of weird.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
That's most of my week. Nothing really. I thought I saw Brian Armstrong yesterday.
Where?
Go into the yoga studio, but I'm not sure. It was just, really? Yeah, I just had like the...
Wait, are you going to the yoga studio?
I was near the
yoga studio. Hey, Will, how do you turn down this volume here on this thing? Now, can you come and do it real quick? I don't know how to...
He just had like the right shade of skin.
Oh, that's and the brightest.
And was also bald.
Who, Brian Armstrong?
Yeah.
All right, cool, there it goes.
So that's why I thought it was him, but I can't... And it looked the right age, but it might not have been him. It would be a weird coincidence.
I don't think he lives in Austin. I thought he lived.
No, he definitely doesn't live in Austin.
Oh, okay.
I don't think. I think they're all remote. Their team.
Interesting.
Anyway, that was a highlight of my week.
That's
today.
Funny.
Yeah. How about you? How was your week,
dude? It's freaking busy. We did startup school this week. We had the Bitcoin Builders Club this week. We announced Francisco announced the Yucatan conference. And then we're here at Alamo Labs because G's doing a fireside chat with Michael Goldstein. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then, we're coming here to do a Stacker News Live. Because I asked you yesterday, I was like, hey, do you want to go? Well, I didn't even ask you. I was like, hey, I'm going to do a Stacker News Live.
Yeah, you're like, do you want to record? Do you want to be sitting at that desk with someone else?
What do you want to do?
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm going to go.
I was like, wow. I was like, because Keon never leaves his office.
I don't really.
That's why I was kind of shocked.
Never really leave Austin. That's why I haven't been to San Antonio, even though I hear great things about it.
Yeah.
Here I'm supposed to do the Riverwalk. Is it good?
I don't know. Is the Riverwalk good, G? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you mean? All right. What do you mean, tourist trip?
Hmm.
Mm. More prices. Okay. Oh, we also have our own audio video guy here today. So that's pretty cool. Shout out Beck. And cool. What do you think about the space though? It's a pretty ball.
I said it looks like a rich guy's apartment. And like, you know, that's what I said it looks like.
Gee, are you OG? Okay, just making sure.
An NG.
This whole time. That'd be interesting. What was I going to say? So just so people know, we're supposed to have somebody on. I won't say who it is because if he doesn't show up, I'm going to be kind of like, or do you want to tell the story or should we just see if he shows up or not?
Oh, I don't. Do you want me to tell the story?
It's up to you.
I thought you wanted it to be, you told me it would be a surprise.
Why are you
telling me to defy your order?
I'm just saying like it's kind of annoying because like it's one of those things where like if he shows up, it's going to be like, it's going to be kind of one of those things where it's like he's coming on our show to talk, but if he doesn't show up, which I don't think he's actually going to show up. I think he's just trolling you.
It's a lot of effort for a troll. He seemed pretty genuine to me.
He seemed pretty genuine to you.
Or they. We don't want to
right. Well, we're gonna start the show. We're normally gonna do it like we normally are, and if he decides to come on, then we'll talk to him. But I don't think it's actually gonna happen. But we'll see. He's supposed to show up here at 4. I don't know. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover the top 5 stories on the front page of Bitcoin. Check out our YouTube page. It's growing. It's getting attention. Apparently enough attention for somebody who wants...
400, right?
Oh, yeah. We broke 400 this week. But apparently so much attention where somebody wants to come on and defend themselves, apparently. We'll see.
You're really giving away now.
Well, I mean, that's the only reason people are tuning in, I would imagine. Wumble's making a ton of clips. There's people that are cluing into some of these clips. Some of the graphing one really got a lot of views this past week. So I guess more people are not knowing about the whole graphing attack. So check that out. Really good stuff. Yeah, we're going to jump into the top 5 stories this week. Let me pull up the meta.
I like how all of our thumbnails for our videos are when we were sexier. People are going to be like,
hey, bro, I lost 13 pounds. So I'm losing.
I mean, you're on your way.
I'm on my way. Yeah, I'm on my way back to that.
True. I'm going the other direction.
That's me.
Let's see how big I can get.
That's me at 23. So I'm on my way back to that. I lost 13 pounds. I went to the doctor 2 weeks ago and I lost 13 pounds. So I'm on my way back. Yeah.
Clean bill of health, guys.
Yeah. So here, let me go to, meta here. Where's my, there he goes. Boom. So the number 5 top story of the week is scenes from the frontier of Bitcoin treasury companies. This is from Scoresby, 23 comments, 6,175 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I think Scoresby went on a bit of a rabbit hole when he came across a post on X. And I think it was from a stray treasury company. So there are so many of these treasury companies now. And he was curious about it because he hadn't heard about it. And then he kind of clicked on link after link, trying to figure out where, if he could identify a familiar person or strand from the company. And it just kind of gets weirder and weirder as he goes deeper, never really finding anyone that is familiar to him. Because most of the treasury companies that we're familiar with are Michael Saylor's strategy. Or what do we have? Metaplanet. There are a few others. I think Strive. Again, there are a lot of them. But this is not one of the ones that we're familiar with. It's it's another company. And then there's they're managed by a consultancy who is somehow related to another company that strictly does investor relations, but only for Bitcoin companies. The conclusion of this is it's frothy right now. The Bitcoin treasury environment is super frothy. We have a bunch of unfamiliar people shilling, things. One example in here is a food company that when you go to their website primarily directs you to an investor relations website. It's kind of what you'd expect, where a lot of these people are phasing out the company that maybe allowed them to be a public company or have some status in the market in favor of just being a Bitcoin holding company.
Yeah, we had Optimism with the top comment. He said, or he's quoting the conversation that Scoresby had there. He says, it's easy to live in a safe little bubble where everything about Bitcoin is familiar and we know how people talk, but Bitcoin is an open permissionless system and there's probably a lot more scamming going on than you suspect. And then Optimus says, fix that for you. Scoresby said, there were so many points in the OP where I could have used that word. I'm generally reluctant to call people scammers, though. The term fits so much of this industry. If once one starts, I'm not sure where to stop. Optimism said, yeah, I was sarcastically proposing hyperbole, even though I kind of believe that it's got about 99.99% chance to be true in this case, too. The problem that the industry has in that the most efficient route in Bitcoin to transact is as peer-to-peer as possible, as close to L1 sats as possible. That means currently on-chain for larger amounts and peer-through-peer using the lowest possible fee route on Lightning. This causes a dilemma for bankers because the Bitcoin system is rigged against them. There's no need for a middleman. Thus, you see very little legit services and many technically unnecessary attempts to seek rent. But I do agree with you that we could call everyone a scammer, and it's kind of a bad hyperbole, even when it's true. Yeah. Keon, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I like being as neutral as possible. But I think that Scoresby was neutral and didn't want to call these people scammers, although it has all the appearances of a scam. And then I also appreciate optimism, just calling it out, because it's somewhat of a risk to call someone a scammer, or at least I feel like it's a risk. I don't want to be wrong when I call someone a scammer. So yeah, I think it is a scam.
I think they're all headed to, and we were talking about on the car ride over here, like, I think it's going to lead to more SPACs, right? It's going to lead to more like Ripple SPACs. We're going to get Cardano SPACs. We're going to get Ethereum SPACs. We're going to get all shitcoin SPACs. We'll probably get a Doge SPAC at some point. And then they're going to turn into their own banks, right? So we're going to get a Doge bank. We're going to get a fucking Ripple bank. We're going to get all these fucking banks. And yeah, that's what it's going to turn into. Let's see if we got this guy.
Oh, man.
Where are we at here?
Holy moly.
Oh, guess who we got on the phone? Perfect timing, dude. David Bailey, who we were just talking about here. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly fine. So where is all this treasury company shit going to? Is it going to just turn into like shitcoin banks where we have Doge banks, fucking Ripple banks, fucking Ethereum banks, fucking BTC banks, and they're all just fractional reserve shitcoins, and we're all just trading in our fucking treasuries? No, I just want to know, where is it all going? Is this where we're all going, where we're just going to the Doge bank and we're getting fractional reserve tokens? Is that what we're doing here?
I think all these other like crypto treasury codes, they're going to end up the same place where the underlying asset ends up. So if you put dog shit in a public company, you end up with dog shit. But, you know, I also, why I came to join the space is I wanted to talk about the last video y'all did where y'all roasted me hard.
No, we slayed you. That's called slaying, David. So in Bitcoin, there's this thing called you can't use the cloak of Bitcoin to push shit coins and scams, right? So in the past, you know this. Come on, David. You can't do that, bro. That's not how that works. So the great scammers of all time, like you know, Arthur Hayes, and we have like, you know, what was that guy that we were talking about earlier?
I don't know. But
so what I'm trying to say is like the greatest scammers of all time, they own that crypto cloak and they just continuously do it. And that's fine. You can do that. But what you can't do is you can't put on the crypto cloak and then go scam. You can't do that, David. That's not the Bitcoin way. What I'm trying to get you to understand is like, you can't put on the Bitcoin conference. You can't call it Bitcoin magazine. And then you can't go and scam. What you can do is you can call it the crypto conference and you can call it crypto magazine and you can go scam. That's cool. But what you should do, and this is why I wanted you to come on, is that what you can do is you should just spin out Bitcoin Magazine, spin out Bitcoin Conference, let Shinobi run it, let somebody who's like a true Bitcoiner run it, and then do Crypto Conference and Bitcoin Crypto Magazine at Vegas, dude. That'll be way bigger, it'll make way more money. And so that's what I think you should do. That's what I advise for you. You're welcome, by the way. I'm giving you free alpha here. And honestly, though, I actually think you'll get a lot more people on your side. So that's all I want you to hear.
Okay. Well, do we have questions for?
No, that's all I really wanted him to hear. You just can't do that. You can't say it's Bitcoin because it's not, dude.
So first off, I just want to say I'm a fan of Stacker News. I'm a fan of the product. I've been a fan for a long time. So, you know, I will, you know, all due respect for a great product, and I think I've been following it since it launched. We actually tried to create a Lightning product as well to like onboard people. It was called Carrot, and then we changed it to the Bitcoin Magazine app. But
appreciate that.
Yeah, respect for what y'all built, and it's a good product. Okay, Thank you. Now let's talk about the issues that you have, because I feel like some of the things that you mentioned in your last video are just. You know, I mean, you can be mad at a fantasy that you can create, or you can like, you know, have like real criticisms that are true, and we can talk about those. But like some of the stuff you're saying is just like not true. It's not true at all,
dude. You actually, I like how you're saying you. Like, no, this is a lot of people, dude. I'm just the only one that's willing to stand up about it, because you're actually pissing a lot of people off. It's just everybody's so afraid of you, bro. That's the weirdest thing, David. And you don't even know that, because you got so many simps. You got so many people who are afraid to tell you to your face. But Kari don't give a shit, bro. Because we don't give a shit. Like, here at Pleb Lab, we don't give a fuck. And then, like, the fact that you have so many people afraid of you that won't tell you to your face is, like, crazy, man. That's the craziest part.
Well, let's hear what's
the craziest part, bro. So that the fact that you have so many simps around you is wild, bro. That's wild to me.
Well, you know, I think if you follow, like, you know, my comments on Twitter, like what people post.
I'm not on Twitter because it's broken.
There's a lot of people that give me shit all the time. So it's like, I don't think like you're the only person who has this view, but you know, you're the only person that articulated in a video that I was like, okay, I'll respond to this because I respect what y'all built. So I thought I'd respond to.
I used to have a lot of respect for you. Like, I was a big fan of you when you like built up the conference and you got it from all those old people, and like what you did and you turned it around. Like, it really reached a height in 21, and like how you, dude, you did so much greatness for the community. But to see where it's gone the past 2 years, bro, like, and then to see what it's doing now, it's just like, all you're doing is making our jobs, boots on the ground, a lot harder, man. Dude, I'm on calls every week and they're literally asking me like, what the fuck is going on in Bitcoin? Like, and I have to sit there and explain like what's going on. And I'm not talking ill will like the way I'm doing it now about you, because I have your attention. I'm literally trying to explain things to them about what's going on in the industry. And like a lot of what you're doing is you're at the very top. You have a lot of influence and you're responsible for a lot of what's going on. It's all trickling down to us here at the bottom, at the plebs who are doing the groundwork.
Like, and so let's let him talk a bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have him for a brief time, but I would. So do you have anything specifically that you wanted to respond to in the first video, or do you?
I mean, it was like the whole video was just like very, very. I felt like, you know, unfair. I mean, look, you can criticize the products that we built that like they could be better. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say that we have perfect products, and like I would challenge you, if you think you can do it better, to go and do it. Like, I'm not like restricting or keeping anyone from competing or trying to build a better product. You know, I think we have the best Bitcoin conference in the world for normal users. Like, it's not a developer conference. It's not, you know, an institutional conference, but in terms of like normal users, I think it's the best Bitcoin conference in the world. And I think Bitcoin Magazine, as far as I'm aware, is the only Bitcoin publication in the world that I know there's like people who run Twitter accounts, but like there's like actually an organization that's out there doing like journalism, et cetera. So we run, you know, probably the biggest Bitcoin journalism outlet that's there. We have the biggest Bitcoin conference. We have the biggest Bitcoin venture fund that's probably funded, I don't know, $50 million of Lightning Network companies, companies across the entire Bitcoin spectrum. And some I'm sure that you'd be critical of, but at the end of the day, they're all utilizing and working on building on Bitcoin. And, you know, like our whole goal and vision for our company is like how to expand Bitcoin adoption, how to get as many people as possible using Bitcoin. Like, that's what we do every day, all day. So it's like, okay, to go from that to like, okay, your video is like, we're the epitome of evil corrupting the culture of Bitcoin. It's like, I don't even know how to, what you're suggesting that we should do differently to have, you know, to respond to your criticism. Like, what's the specific thing that you think we do wrong?
Well, first off, like, you're literally inviting a Chinese communist named Justin Sun to your conference. Like, why are you inviting a known Chinese communist to your conference and then getting him in dinner with Donald Trump, who is also like, what the fuck is that, dude? Like, everybody knows in Bitcoin he's a Chinese communist. And then so you have the CCP talking to fucking Donald Trump, who we know the last presidency, Joe Biden, also had Chinese communists in his cabinet. So this is another thing, dude, where I just feel like you're literally just not like, no one's telling you these things. I don't know if you just don't have an advisor, or no one's like saying, hey, Dave, like, maybe this is not a good idea for these reasons, or like you're just, or no one's just like checking you or something. And like this, so like maybe we just need a phone call every once in a while. So you just like, hey, Carr, what do you think? Like, or maybe you just need to like get outside your bubble, which is Twitter, and like just like something like. And so that's what I'm trying to say is like, I don't know if you're actually like getting some real good, solid people around you that are telling you what's going on. And like when you were talking about the whole Lightning space and you're funding it, it's all shitcoin stuff, dude. It's all like shitcoin stuff. There's nothing actually really real that you're funding. The other thing that you mentioned was the you said there's no hang on, let me finish. The other thing that you mentioned was like, oh, there's no Bitcoin. Yes, there is. There's Bitcoin News. Bitcoinnews.com is doing some really good stuff. We use them. Pleb Lab uses Bitcoin News. They covered a lot of our conferences. You said there's no good conferences. Yes, there is. There's Bitcoin Plus Plus doing amazing stuff. You also said there's no other good conference. Yes, there is. There's Bitblock Boom doing amazing stuff here in Texas. Bitblock Boom. Bitcoin Comp, Bitcoin Plus Plus. Wait on, let me finish. I let you finish, David. Right. My turn. So there's Bitcoin Plus Plus doing amazing stuff around the world. There is also Bitblock Boom doing amazing stuff here in Texas. There is TabConf doing amazing things here in Atlanta. There, we are doing our own conference, Bitcoin only conference, mind you, here at the Yucatan, which I'll invite you to so you can see what a real Bitcoin conference looks like. And then what I'm also saying is like, Bitcoin News. So there are real Bitcoin conferences happening, David, outside of your bubble in Las Vegas.
What
I'm trying to say, David, is like outside of your bubble, there's other things going on. So that's what I'm trying to say. I think you just in your bubble where you exist, that's what you see.
I think that's a point he made. I think the point he made was that it was the biggest, and he, you know, by his own standards, the best. You know, and I think he's okay with people disagreeing with that.
Yeah, there's lots of great conferences out there. I'm not saying that there's not great conferences. I'm just saying that there's no other conference that's a 35,000 person event. It's a different thing. I think it's good that we have it. I think that there's can be many different conferences that do different things really well. I think like what we're trying to do is we're trying to make Bitcoin mainstream. So like that's what we are trying to focus on.
Yeah, I think I wanted to answer a question. I think you've addressed most of Carr's points already. I think the question people vilify you, and I would guess it's because in the attempt to take Bitcoin mainstream, you're maybe doing things that they think you shouldn't be doing, like funding some of the companies you're funding are maybe not actually really that close to Bitcoin. They're kind of in the periphery. It's kind of taking advantage of Bitcoin's halo. Sponsors of the conference, or maybe, you know, companies that you wouldn't want your parents or someone you care about to be putting money into or believing in. And so how do you think about that? And do you regret any of those decisions you've made or anything like that?
So in terms of like the companies that we funded or backed, like we probably funded, I don't know, 100 companies at this point. And there's lots of companies that we've backed that I'm sure y'all use the products or support. I mean, I don't think Unchained is a shitcoin product. You know, I don't think, you know, I think we're actually the biggest Lightning provisioner on the network. We have a company in Canada called LQWD. We've probably funded, I don't know, 35, 50 Lightning companies. So I feel like we funded lots of companies that are great Bitcoin companies. Where we've gotten controversy is like, I have a view of Bitcoin that I want all people to use Bitcoin. Like as many people as possible use Bitcoin, to build on Bitcoin, to experiment on Bitcoin. And I, you know, don't have a view that I believe Bitcoin's money, but I don't have a view that you can only use Bitcoin in this capacity. I think like anything you can build with Bitcoin, you should try to build with Bitcoin. And I think that if people want to build a casino on Bitcoin and they want to, you know, create meme coins and NFTs on Bitcoin, like I don't have a problem with people using Bitcoin like that. And I would rather someone buy an NFT on Bitcoin that's goofy than buy it on Solana or Ethereum.
You're running the biggest, best conference. You have all this credibility, and you're lending credibility to these things that you admit are kind of scammy because you'd rather the scams be on Bitcoin. And do you think, like, how do you square that? I guess because I know you you want to do good. That's your aim, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think that I would characterize, you know, these things as scammy. Now you can be like, NFTs are a dumb idea. And I like generally, I wouldn't push back that like NFTs are like, they're silly. But I mean, I don't like having a big, like there's companies that make trading cards in Bitcoin. Okay. Like you can call that a scam. I mean, there's like all sorts of stuff that people do for entertainment value that like, you know, it's a free market. People can do what they want to do. And I think that they should be entitled to do what they want to do. The in terms of like the things that we fund, I wouldn't characterize anything that we funded as a scam. You know, there are things that we funded that haven't worked. But like, you know, we want to see Bitcoin scale as much as possible. I think we're probably like the leading person who's funded alternative layer two solutions. Some of those have totally imploded. Some of those have been, you know, state chain solutions. We funded Spider Chain. We funded Critia. I can't pronounce it. The
Citria, I think.
Yeah. Citria. So, I mean, like there's all sorts of things that, you know, maybe they seem outside consensus, but like if one of them works and we have 99 investments that fail, I think it's worthwhile to still pursue. Like that's the creative process. Like you just like, you let people who have interesting ideas and a lot of excitement to go and build them and make them happen. You give them the resources to let them do it. And it's like, okay, if the market wants it, it'll be successful. If the market doesn't want it, it'll die out. So it's like, that's.
Yeah. To be the voice of like your critics, I think, but to take a cynical view, I think they would say that you're funding those companies that are maybe on the boundary of things, not to do more for Bitcoin, but out of a financial interest. And is that, do you think that's an unfair characterization of that?
No, I mean, I'm definitely not running a charity. Like I'm trying to make money. I'm trying to build a business that makes money and can like employ the team and cover the costs and make money personally. Like, I mean,
At what cost? I mean, even if the goal is like hyper Bitcoinization, at what cost is it worth paying to get to hyper Bitcoinization? I think that's the way I've come to view some of the actions that of the Bitcoin conference and Bitcoin magazine, is that it's like a trolley car thing where it's like, okay to scam one person or mislead one person to get five into Bitcoin in a serious way. Is that a calculus you do, or is it more removed like you're suggesting?
We would never suggest that anyone misleads anyone else. Like, I mean, we don't intentionally platform anything that's misleading. We don't like, we're adamantly against anyone committing fraud. So it's just like, okay, what you're all criticizing, or what people who are critics would criticize of what we invest into, they think it's a fraud. But if you talk to the people that are building it, they don't think it's that. And so it's just like, they have different perspectives on it. And like, my general view is like, I'm not trying to be the gatekeeper of the Bitcoin community that's selecting that these things can have a platform and these things can't have a platform, or like this is the appropriate way to use Bitcoin and this one isn't. Like, I'm not smart enough to do that, to be frank. Like, I'm not smart. Nobody wants me to be in the gatekeeper position.
But you have access to people who are smart enough to make those decisions.
I mean, I think that if you took my network of people that I know who I think are universally would be considered smart, and I went and asked different people their opinions on the same topic, I would get different answers on the same topic.
They're lying to you. A lot of them are lying to you, David. I'm realizing
this right now. If I go ask Jeremy Rubin what he thinks about...
Me and Jeremy disagree on a lot of things. So that, okay. I'm just telling you right now. That a lot of these people are just... That's what I'm saying. You're not actually hearing it from people who will give you... So one of the great things about Austin, Texas, is we have a lot of people on a lot of different sides. When you go to a BitDevs in Austin, you're hearing from a lot of people who disagree with each other. That's what's great about Austin, Texas. And so you'll hear from like people in the room on a lot of different sides. And there will be people who are bad. And that's good. That's what you want. You want people disagreeing in that room. And so that's how you make the best decisions going forward in a community.
You're criticizing me because I'm doing the exact same thing.
So who's disagreeing with you in the room when you're making these investments?
No, I'm saying like the content that you're upset about, or, you know, The investments that you're upset about, there are people who have an alternative opinion that you do. Like there are people who think that these things are valuable or these things hold potential for Bitcoin, et cetera. And so like, that's the exchange of ideas. And so like, in the same way that you're saying that having different opinions is a good thing, like I agree, it's having the best ideas win. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, the criticism of like saying, hey, well, I should be the one who's filtering the ideas, or like that only a certain subset of ideas are acceptable to have, I think that that's like wrong. I think that's wrong.
Well, you're in charge, David. You're in charge of all this. You're the one who's making the decisions. And a lot of us have to live and die by what your decisions that you're making. That's what I'm telling you. You're at the very top. You have a lot of influence, man. And I'm literally having you on the thing because I'm like the only one who's willing to tell you. Me and Keon are the only one willing to tell you the truth. And we're just telling you, like, we're seeing it from the very bottom. We're plebs here at the bottom, man. We have your attention for like 20 minutes maybe, and I'm just telling you what it's like here at the very bottom, and we're telling you like, this is what we're having to deal with on a daily basis. These are the people that we're talking to on a daily basis. Like, I was on a call with an investor this week, and he's asking me, what is all this SPAC shit going on? Why are there people at the top of this thing just putting a little spigot here and they're siphoning off? He didn't want to invest in anything in Bitcoin. Oh, okay. It's literally, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, let me just finish, David. He's literally saying he doesn't want to invest in anything in Bitcoin because of all this shitcoinery going on. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, it's fucking up everybody's shit, man.
What shitcoin are you talking about? You talking about public treasury companies?
Yeah.
It basically just muddies everything below you.
It muddies everything. That's what I'm saying.
So what's the critique of Bitcoin treasury companies?
Oh man, do we have, how long do you have? How long can you talk for? Are you good the rest of the night? No. We're not going to show your Bitcoin. We're not going to show your Bitcoin treasury companies, man. I know how bad you want to show that. We're not doing that. But anyway, I don't want to take up too much of your time.
What's the issue with Bitcoin treasury?
No, I don't want to talk about that because like that's not what we had you on. I just wanted to get you on, and you know, I just want to apologize because like, I do feel like I came off too hard. I don't want you to cancel or anything. I love that you came on and defended yourself. I love that you fed the fact that you are listening to us. I think that's a big part of that. So I do apologize for going a little too hard on you. I do have a lot of respect for you, what you built. Like that takes, you know, supreme balls on your side. I do think you could be a little bit more open to the devs and the people. Like you didn't get them Wi-Fi this year. What's up with that? And then the other thing, like some of them haven't been paid on their hackathon winnings. And we have a couple people in the room that didn't get paid. So you might want to follow up on that. And then just listen to the plebs, man. Like those are the people on the bottom. Just listen to them, bro. That's it. You don't have to put up with them, but you should just listen to them. That's your alpha, right? Those are the people that are like run the nodes. That's it.
Well, first off, I'm here having this discussion and it's like,
yeah, I know.
When you say something, like when it's a legitimate criticism, I try to be open to it, but I also don't want to be criticized for things that are just not true, that are not true. And like, in terms of like the two things that you just mentioned, first off, like I think the developer community is the most important community in Bitcoin. And so, one of the things that's frustrating, I think you actually said this in your last video that we don't do enough to support core devs. Well, it's a highly sensitive thing for us to support core devs. We used to actually give a lot of money to development, different grants, different core devs, but it became so toxic that anytime I gave money to someone, all of a sudden there's accusations that like it's like we're bribing these core devs to go do something. That actually me putting resources behind someone has become an attraction from that person. So like the whole dynamic that's unfolded is actually, it actually like keeps... Like we want to do more, but it's like we have to balance it with like not causing this person's life to be hell because now that everyone's attacking them for taking
money from you. Yeah, that makes sense.
In terms of the conference, and as far as I'm aware, we're the only conference in the world, Bitcoin world, that has an open source developer program where we've been giving tickets since the beginning of this conference to I don't even know the numbers now.
I think it's like only 100 a year is my understanding because there's just not many. I mean, not to your, you would give to more, I assume, but there aren't many
Bitcoin devs that are.
But let's be honest, David. No one wants to go to that conference anyway. Come on, no developer wants to go to that conference, dude.
No one wants to go, dude. Especially in Vegas,
Over 100 open source projects that if you submit, get a pull request on, like you're going to get a free ticket. It's like
I know you guys have done a lot in that regard. I know about that program, and I don't think it ends up producing much in terms of free ticket and attendance. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
So the program could be better.
Better, dude.
There's ways to make it better. You know, we're open.
Wi-Fi is one of them.
Yeah. Well, we did have a Wi-Fi. Like the you know, every time we go to a different convention center and stuff, the vendors change, the rules change. I mean, like
Justin's son got Wi-Fi. That's all I'm saying. Justin's son got Wi-Fi.
Some of this stuff cost us hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to provide. Like, I don't know all the details. I'm not in like where I am in the company at this point. It's like I pay the bills for the company, but like I'm not in the day-to-day operations anymore. Back in the day, I was in the
But David,
operations.
You're responsible for all that, David.
I know, but I'm just saying I can't speak to all the different reasons why certain decisions.
At the end of the
day,
you're to blame for it,
so,
though.
So I'm curious. So we mentioned Justin's son a few times. I guess this is more because this is higher level. These are probably decisions you're actually involved in. What is the process like for deciding that Justin's son should come and speak at the Bitcoin conference?
Do you work for the CCP?
So one thing on that front, in terms of the political piece, I don't give a rat's ass about what someone's political background is. I don't care what political party they're from. I don't care what country they're from. I don't care if they represent the Taliban. I don't care about any of that stuff. All I care about is them using Bitcoin. So like, frankly, like
Did he pay you in Tron to come on the stage? Did he pay you to Tron?
I don't care what their background is.
Did he give Trump Tron to get in the dinner with him?
If they're a scammer, though, if they're like a known scammer, that's okay. So long as they use Bitcoin in their scam. No. I mean,
we have very hard criteria for the conference. So, I mean, like we have a lot of.
Can you just promise me no communists at the Bitcoin conference?
Well, communists Bitcoin.
I'm absolutely okay with a communist liking Bitcoin. You know,
promise me no communists in the Trump administration?
No.
Are you not for America?
Are
you not pro America? Are you not pro America, David?
I'm pro Bitcoin.
You're not pro America. Does Trump know this? Aren't you an advisor to Donald Trump though?
So
you're not pro. So wait, hang on a second, because you're not pro America, but you work with the Trump administration.
I just said I'm pro America. I'm pro America.
Okay, but you're pro America, but you're pro China too, communist.
No, I'm pro people using Bitcoin everywhere. So you know, I don't care about political parties or factions. I want people to use Bitcoin. So now to your question about Justin.
The New York Times is writing about this, right?
About what?
About him being a communist and him also having dinner with Trump. Like, you know, that's a big thing that the liberals are writing about. That's what I'm trying to say, man. Like, you're teeing it up for them. Like, it's a whole thing now, dude. Like, you're just giving them ammo. Like, this is not good for Bitcoin, man.
All I can say about that situation is that there are certain things that happen where certain levers are pulled upon where... there are certain things that are outside of my creative control. Okay. Let's just put it like that. So, you know, like there's a lot of things at stake broadly with Bitcoin in the United States. And, like we are trying to do our part to move all this stuff forward. And, you know, I'm not going to get in a fight that is like not worth getting into because someone wants to appear at an event.
So you're saying that you're not actually controlling the Bitcoin conference is what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that like sometimes when you run an organization, you have to make a calculated decision of what battles are worth fighting and what battles are counterproductive towards your broader cause. And so
it's kind of like, so you're basically saying for the plebs that are listening at home, it's like, do we choose to fight Tether or not? It's like leave Tether alone, Car.
That's not a battle we need to fight right now.
Like I asked you the trolley car problem earlier, and this sounds very similar to me, where it's like you're making a calculated decision for a bigger goal, and you're willing to make a sacrifice because it's, you know, you want to win the war.
This is kind of like being president. It sounds like, no wonder. I'm starting to feel bad for you a little bit.
I mean, there are certain things where we do have to make that calculus. Like I wouldn't make that calculus of like from an investment perspective, like, hey, we're going to back this even though it damages someone. Like we would not make that calculus. That's a decision coming from us. I would make a calculus when like we're balancing a lot of things. Like,
dude, this is not a fun job, man.
No, it's not a fun job. And then when
it's, why do you do this?
Bro,
well then why do you do it for? Like why are you doing this for, dude?
Because I've been on this journey starting as a pleb, on this journey for 13 years, and I intend to see it through. And
what's the end goal?
Hyper Bitcoinization. That's the end goal. And so like I'm all in on that. Like that train has left for me. So it's like, okay, now I only have one direction I can go in my life, which is to take this to a conclusion.
Well, at least we can agree with that. We can agree on the end goal.
So like,
I think there's a better way to do it. I actually think there's a better way to do it, but we can agree on the end goal.
Well, dude, you know, all I can do it is do it my way. I can't do it other people's way. And so like doing it my way, like, you know, there's a lot to criticize doing it my way. But, you know, doing it my way, we've also gotten a lot of stuff done. We've made a lot of stuff happen. So, you know, like there's we're by no stretch perfect, but I think it's a misrepresentation to say that we don't care about Bitcoin or that we do this stuff.
Well, now that I'm learning about you, I definitely feel sorry for you. I definitely do. Don't feel sorry for me. No, dude, I'm gonna start praying for you, bro. I'm really gonna start praying for you, and hopefully you make some better decisions. I'm gonna ask God to like bless you. Hopefully that he makes you like think a little bit more heavily on this. I'm going to ask him that he gives you a little better discernment and wisdom. And hopefully he'll put that in your heart. And then also what I'm going to do is just like reach out to you from time to time and say, hey dude, do you need a car like in the gut to like get you on right track again? And then I think with those two things, I think we'll pull through. Don't invite communists to the Bitcoin conference, man, unless you actually have to roll that trolley over. But try not to, man. That's not a good look.
Dude, if you went back through the history of the Bitcoin conferences, every conference, there's a boycott of our conference for a different reason every year. That is always because there's someone participating that a group of people don't like. We've been, one year we were blockaded by the feminist for having Peter Todd. One year really? We were blockaded by the Cubans because we had someone who they said was a representative of the Cuban government speak, who's like building on something on Lightning, I think, actually. You know, one year we had, I mean, dude, every year it's a different reason why like we're canceled. So it's just like we've now just come to like, okay, there's no way to keep everyone satisfied. And so the only way that we can operate is just by having a standard that we apply that we can defend. And the standard is like, dude, what our domain is we want people to use Bitcoin. We want people to expand the utility of Bitcoin. We want as many people as possible saving, spending, storing their value in Bitcoin. And, you know, we have to just like take all these other factors and remove them from our lens, because that's not our battle fight. Like our battle fight is just like Bitcoin adoption.
It was good talking to you, David.
Yeah. Thanks, David. I don't know if you have more to say, but I think we got your side pretty well, and people can hear it. And yeah. I think Carr got a good, you know, a few punches in that he probably feels happy with. I don't want to keep you longer, and
thank you all for having me on. Keep building Stacker News. It's a great product. You know, hey, before I bounce, I'd love to hear about Stacker News. Like how is that going? Where what's the future of Stacker News?
There might be a conversation to have on Stacker News, but everyone watching this is probably familiar with it. But it, you know, just trying to use Bitcoin to make online life better is specifically online discussions better, online like social media stuff better. That's a broad view of it. But I can send you, I'll send you some information.
How's it working out?
It's going okay. I wouldn't say it, when we had to switch off of a custodial wallet, because we had a KYC, we had a no KYC custodial wallet, when we had to switch off of that, because we were after the Samurai indictment, it became difficult because that was like a tool that was attracting people to the product that they could use Lightning easily. It was many people's first Lightning wallet. And now we're non-custodial, and it's a big, big point of friction. But that is like, you know, if I were, if I had Donald Trump's ear, selfishly, I would ask for just like de minimis exceptions to like KYC tax stuff. I know you're working on the tax stuff.
Oh, we've been fighting that. It was the de minimis would not just be for taxes. The de minimis would also be for KYC. Like there's no need to report. You'd get both in one. So yeah,
that'd be great. Yeah, that'd help us. And, that'd help out these Lightning apps a lot because the friction point is huge. But that's like the story. I can send you more info some other time if you want it. But I do appreciate you coming on. I think you're an important figure in Bitcoin. And
well, don't go that far. Come on, dude.
No, I mean, we don't need to kiss his ass.
It could be good, dude. He's not the most important person.
I didn't say most important. I said he's an important figure in Bitcoin, good or bad.
He's okay. He's okay. Come on.
The devil is important.
Stay humble. Stay humble, Dave Bailey.
I was saying something ambiguous to.
He has a hard fucking job. I'll give him that. He has a hard fucking job, but like he's not.
All right, guys. Well, dude, I thank y'all for having me on. I promise I'm not the boogeyman, and you know, all our goals are. Is to advance Bitcoin, and if there's ever a way that we can work with y'all to advance Bitcoin, y'all hit us up. We do Bitcoin all day, every day, 365. So
write more base right. Shit. That's all I will say. Just write more base shit. Hey, on
you, know, you should hit up Shinobi, and you should.
I do. That dude never writes back. He never.
You should write something for Bitcoin Magazine.
I just hit up Juan now because like Shinobi never hits me back.
You should write an article about
You come and do an. You come and do an AMA on Stacker News first. And then I'll think about it.
Okay, so yeah, I'll do that. And then you can write an article about.
And then you also fly to the Yucatan and come to startup day.
All right.
That'll make Francisco happy. Later.
Thank you, David.
All right.
Holy shit, dude!
You can't let him. You can't just let him bully you around, Kian. I feel like you. You're just
I'm not no I just I want to hear what he has
he's
to
a
say
dude
I know I like it I what so my point of view on this stuff is if they I want them to try to scam me I want them to lie to me and let people watch it I don't feel like being in the moment getting what you call getting bullied or getting
it's not being bullied he's a normal dude
no but you said bullied you
oh
said,
no yeah I felt like you were just like letting him like
I wanted to let him talk I wanted to let people hear his side and let them disagree with it and see maybe where
I feel bad for him where, actually where they think really he's not being feel honest bad for him. I actually do
I didn't realize he had that much shit like when he was trying to explain the whole like Justin Sun thing I was like fuck like I heard that and I was like damn he must have some motherfuckers in his ears telling him like you're gonna let this fuck
that was out. Pretty that was pretty that
and
was
then the other terrible. Thing about when he was saying like about the was the other shit that he said there was another thing he said and I was just like damn this guy doesn't even fucking run his own conference that's the pleb spidey sense that was going off in my ear
I know yeah.
I was just like damn and then when he was saying like oh no I do check in with everybody and then he said Jeremy Rubin sorry Jeremy I do love you by the way but like when he was saying all these other people I was just like he doesn't even have a fucking real Bitcoiner in there in the room telling him like what's really going on like so that was another like thing where I was like he doesn't even have people in the room
really yeah Shinobi in the room with him yeah it's
yeah but like he's like the same thing like Jeremy where like they're on the same like he doesn't have like he doesn't have like a Nick basically he doesn't have like a base person telling
well
him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if Nick would be allowed on the premises.
But no, I'm saying you need somebody like that. You need somebody like a little based. Anyways, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. I think you're right. His job is really tricky.
It's really tough.
Yeah,
I don't envy that
job. But anyway, and it was kind of just at one point he was I think towards the end he said that each one of his conferences have had protesters.
Yeah, that was interesting. I didn't realize that.
Well, I think in most of those cases, consensus would be those protesters are wrong. In the case of someone like Justin Sun, I think consensus would be the conference is wrong.
That was a really good reason when he said like it doesn't matter, it's Bitcoin, and I think he's right there. Like in that sense, I think he's right. Like That's a good enough reason. I actually think as a, it is kind of scary though, that that argument is right. I mean, it falls in line with what, you know,
right.
I mean, but it's still, it falls in line with the train of thinking, like Bitcoin's for everyone. Right. At the same time, it is kind of weird though, where it's like,
But
at the same time though, it's kind of one of those things where if it's not entirely his decision, then what the fuck? Like, he doesn't have a choice. And I'm realizing now that based off of this conversation, I don't think he actually fucking runs the conference. I think there's other people behind the scenes pulling the strings. And I actually think he just fucking, like, that's what I'm realizing.
I think very large companies, they do.
You want to come on? Jim wants to come on.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the voice of Nick, sort of a disciple of Nick.
I wouldn't say Nick is a disciple of Jim. It's actually another way around. But no, I mean, I respect David, obviously what he built and the fact that he came on. I thought that was awesome. I didn't know that was off screen, but you know, I guess I would have asked more Socratic method questions. Like, you're not the gatekeeper of Bitcoin, but you're like an editorialized publication on Bitcoin. Like, you have some gatekeeping. Where's the line? Would you let somebody come on and promote heinous crimes on Bitcoin? Like, violent crimes using Bitcoin just because they use Bitcoin? Like, probably not. So so you can say, like, I don't have a line. There's no line. I don't judge, but you do judge. You do have a line. If you have a line, you can move the line. And I think the line should be moved way further down, away from shitcoins, because it muddies the waters. Like, if your goal is hyper Bitcoinization, the truth is that it should be focused on Bitcoin. There should be none of these other, like, crypto scams and lending and all this other stuff, like Bitcoin. And so I get that there's like a, like, you're, it's almost like you got to accumulate resources to run the thing, but I don't understand how that calculation goes. I think the line is way tighter than what he's doing, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's actually a fair point. He acknowledges that he has a line and that, or that where the gate is and where it's being kept. And, you know, and then at other points says that he's not a gatekeeper. And so there, yeah. So I think there is a contradiction there. I'm in a weird place where I don't even care. Like, I didn't really study David Bailey. I don't know the decisions he's made. I don't know how much harm he might've caused. I read Shinobi's column and Joaquin Book stuff and Frank Cordova's stuff, or Corova. Corva stuff. I read what goes on Bitcoin Magazine that I like to read. So I didn't really have any detailed criticism, except I just wanted to hear how he responded to the general criticisms that I see. And I thought it was great. And how do you think it went, Carr?
I think it went as well as we could have possibly gone. I definitely learned a lot about him. Definitely feel sorry for him. Definitely going to start praying for him. Definitely learned that he doesn't actually run the conference. Definitely learned that he doesn't have any people in his corner. Learned that. I just really feel genuinely sorry for him. I went from actually like thinking that he was this really bad guy and like kind of a dumbass and like has this lifestyle that he has to keep up with to like actually, the opposite.
Like a victim.
Yeah.
That's the way you think of him?
Yeah. Which he could be playing a victim, but like, I don't think he is. I think he's like, you see, he has two screens. So he's like obsessed with work and he seems like a overachiever too. So yeah. I think you're right. It was funny. You kind of had him pegged about the trolley car thing.
I think it just, that, I think
that that's actually,
we're all
that,
making, we're all,
that's actually, his, that's, fundamental that's the thing. Mindset that he's actually making.
Yeah.
To get type of Bitcoinization, which I think you nailed.
That's the only way, like, thinking.
It was kind of funny. He was trying to swing you at the end. He was like, tell me about that.
Well, I was like, dude, what am I going to say?
He was trying to swing you at the end. He's like, we invest in Unchained. Maybe we'll invest in Stacker News.
Oh, I don't need that money. I don't need that rap either. I need to find myself on a podcast like this a few years from now.
Anyways, let's jump into the number four tops. That was funny though. He literally called in when we were talking about all that shit.
Oh, the we were talking about the smacks.
That was the perfect time.
You just jumped at him right away.
Yeah. What about smacks? I was waiting for it. The number four top story is I fumbled my brief orange pilling chance. This is from Sicky 47. 43 commas, 1,451 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Sicky has been going to Steak and Shake, which now accepts Bitcoin as payment. And I guess he paid with Bitcoin, and one of the attendants there noticed that he paid with Bitcoin. And he had an opportunity to explain Bitcoin to them, and he felt like he didn't do a good job. And Sicky has been living and breathing Bitcoin for years now. And so he was kind of disappointed in himself. And I think he's now going to try to figure out a better elevator pitch for Bitcoin. Because I think most of his Bitcoin evangelizing probably took place online or at, you know, Bitcoin meetups where he's talking to people who are more susceptible. But talking to like a completely green person who has no experience with Bitcoin is probably pretty tricky on a relative basis.
How's the Steak and Shake here, guys? Is it pretty good? Have y'all used the Bitcoin here? Yeah, you're wearing a Steak and Shake hat, right? Oh wow! Did you guys have those hats here? Oh, that's cool. Can you show the camera what that looks like? Will has a Steak and Shake Stack and Sats. They don't sell those at Steak and Shake, right?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's awesome. Do y'all go there all the time? Or here, Tim, talk to them. Talk a little bit. So Will works at Alamo Labs.
We've actually got a little relationship with them now. We met the local franchise owner, and he supported us in our launch for Alamo Labs. So we got a sponsorship, got about 50 burgers delivered. But it's a really cool setup that they have. Like, it's just, there's no teller you're talking to. It's just a screen. So you punch in your order, you pick your payment method. You can pay cash, you can pay a card, or you can pay a Bitcoin. And so you click Bitcoin, and it's just a Lightning invoice that pops up. And you just pay real quick. Print order goes to the kitchen, and then they just call your name when you're ready for your burger.
Wow.
Pretty sweet checkout process, something that kind of needs to be like a smooth process, so it's no difference than your fiat checkout.
Do the people behind the counter, like Sicky was saying here, do they know about Bitcoin or they don't really care?
So we talked to, again, we only have history with our local franchise here. There's one of them. But I talked to the assistant manager for a little bit because we told him we were from the San Antonio Bitcoin Club. And, you know, he was interested, but it's kind of like a lot of people, no coiners that we talk to, they just don't have the time or they have no education about it, but they're interested in it. And so we tell them about the resources that we have here. And even with the franchise owner, it's kind of how you're talking about David. Like, he's just another guy. Like, so is this franchise owner. He's just another guy kind of interested in Bitcoin, but he's got his whole business going. And so being something that they can lean on and forming a little relationship, it was really cool. He was really quick to want to support us. All we had to do was ask.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and he also said that Steak and Shake business has been kind of booming since they announced the acceptance of Bitcoin as payment. So pretty cool.
Really cool stuff. That's awesome, man.
At the Bitcoin conference, when I think it was the CEO or CMO or something was on stage, he said that the Bitcoin decision was not about marketing, but evidence would suggest that it was a pretty successful marketing campaign. Because I had not been aware of Steak and Shake's existence for the most part until
It makes me want to try it. It definitely makes me want to try it.
Yeah, sure. Right?
Yeah. Cool. The next top story is how people experiences the path towards hyperinflation. This is from, what is that? Did Play Well? 8 comments.
Did I Play Well?
13,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah. Did I Play Well usually writes about Argentina. I think they currently live in Argentina. I think at one point they were even in Malay's cabinet, but I shared, or someone shared, I think, oh no, yeah, I shared an article about hyperinflation that was written by, I think, a guy named John Cook, that describes, or he was confused by how people in a hyperinflationary economy, they don't end up switching off of the local currency, even though it's hyperinflating, that they kind of just
go with the flow and don't switch off to a stronger money in mass and, you know, save themselves from hyperinflation. So John Cook here was kind of confused about that. A short article, admittedly didn't really do much research, but did I play well, who has firsthand experience in a hyperinflationary economy, kind of workshopped the scenario of an average citizen experiencing hyperinflation in that article on Stacker News. And he breaks it down kind of into 10 points, but the it's kind of like boiling a frog a little bit, where things subtly change, gradually, and then suddenly you're at a 1,000% inflation. One of the stages, one of the later stages of hyperinflation, and I guess Argentina experienced in the early 90s, was 1,000%, I think, annual inflation. He said it was to the point where you would try to grab as many things as possible while you were at the register, because in just simply walking from a shelf to the register would change the prices such that they would increase. Yeah. That's how bad it was at one point. There are some of the other things I hadn't even realized would happen in a hyperinflationary economy, but he said one of the things is you actually have a lot of like reduced selection of goods in the stores that you would normally go to. And that's that begins sort of earlier as it's just beginning to ramp up. Maybe you previously had 20 types of bread that you could buy in the bread aisle. And then I think to achieve some cost savings, they maybe start stocking more of a select few bread brands, because they get some maybe discount at volume, and they subtle effects start creeping in, and it's just subtle until it's like obvious and you're at the point where you have 1,000% inflation. He's telling the story from the perspective of someone who, you know, was kind of disinterested in the economy, didn't really understand why their friends in government were extremely well off despite not working. I thought it was really excellent. I learned a lot in it. This is the thread that he ended up writing based on, but where he asked, I could explain why people get themselves in this situation in a hyperinflationary economy. And then he followed up with this post here.
Yeah, it looks like he goes through all the different phases, the abyss, the darkness, about why that happens and what happens to all the merchants and everything. Undisciplined had the top comment. He said, that was excellent. I'd say the situation in America feels like somewhere between steps 4 and 5 in the abyss, and how do shop owners actually update prices so rapidly? Clearly, they can't be relabeling that often. Did play well, says, I'm glad you liked it. I see the same, but those are the return points still. God forbid it escalates any further. Price tags become meaningless and people become used to distrust whatever price tag they see. What are you guys seeing here in San Antonio? Is there a lot of inflation happening in San Antonio? Or do you see businesses closing down or no? Or that's not happening in San Antonio? Yeah, so pricing's going up. So it hurts, but it's not killing you. Like definitely in Austin, there's like a lot of businesses closing down for sure. There's at least like 4 businesses I can think of just in downtown area that's closing down. $100,000 is not enough anymore to live on in Austin for sure. That's crazy to think, right? Like a year ago, that's like insane. But nowadays, I would say 100,000 is just not cutting it. What else, Keon?
Well, we're in San Antonio, which isn't too far from Austin. I think
it's weird because, like in Corpus, I see everything like same level. Like nothing's changed as far as like food prices or anything when I visited.
Really,
the rent has roughly stayed the same. Yeah, in Corpus, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Mm.
Yeah. 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 Austin, I think Austin's just higher. There's just higher pricing there.
Yeah.
I definitely know there's like the Royal Blue Grocery around the corner from Blah Blah is closing down, I think, because they couldn't keep the same lease terms.
The other place down the street.
Yeah.
It's closing down too.
Yeah, they said they just had to relocate. They're down to, they were on Congress before, and I think they got outbid or something on their lease, and then they had to leave. Yeah.
Leave.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I believe it. They're cleaning a lot of stuff downtown. I think what's happening is a lot of businesses are closing, and then you're seeing a lot of new, like, new money come in and like purchase all these old buildings.
Cool. Yeah, we're not in hyperinflation. Fortunately, we're not experiencing hyperinflation, but yeah, it is. We have a little glimpse of some inflation at least.
We're gonna go to number two story: Bitcoin brick and mortar. This is from Siggy 47, 52 comments, 8,680 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, this is another top story from Siggy this week. That hasn't happened in a long time.
It's from Peter.
So Siggy, for a long time, was semi-retired as a lawyer, and I guess he's recently fully retired, and he said he's bored. So after his meals at Steak and Shake, he's beginning to get interested again in starting a local business that accepts Bitcoin. So a brick and mortar business, you know, something, not an internet company, but, you know, in this specific case, he's referencing PubKey and Melville Deli, both of which accept Bitcoin. Melville Deli is where they host a Bitcoin meetup on Long Island. And then PubKey is the, I think, better well-known bar in New York City that does a lot of Bitcoin stuff. I think they host the New York BitDevs these days, or just another Bitcoin meetup. I'm not exactly sure. Yeah, he's just talking about this is something maybe he wants to do in retirement, is create a local Bitcoin business that accepts Bitcoin, evangelizes Bitcoin. I'd be curious what type of, it sounds like he might be interested in a restaurant. And I've talked to him a bit about Italian food. I wonder if he'd start an Italian restaurant with that accepts Bitcoin. But my suggestion was, or like, if I were to do something similar, I'd probably want to do like a laundromat or a automated car wash, or go the other route, and rather than being like capital intensive, do something like mobile detailing. Or like storage. Storage units. Yeah, something that's like especially in retirement, like not an intense business. How about you? What would you do?
I think I'm already doing it. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, just doing Plub Lab. I like it. I like doing that. It's fun. I get to hang out with my friends all day and build stuff.
What if you're in Siggy's position though? Would you start?
What would I do if I was Siggy? I would just live, be happy with my family, and raise my grandkids, and that's it. Yeah.
But what if he's bored?
Oh, does he have grandkids and kids or no? I don't know. He's ever talks about them.
He's talked about his daughter before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would just raise my grandkids and go to church.
They don't want to spend all their time with you. That's kind
of becoming adult. At that time, I would just hang out with my wife and
bother
her all day. I'd probably just probably do something with my church and be more community focused, and probably get back to the community where I would give either to the youth or give to the, give my free time to the community. Probably that's probably what.
Okay,
I would
so via church,
I would be church. Yeah, I would be church.
You'd go to church rather than Bitcoin.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I would do. I just spent all my time there.
Well, that doesn't help Siggy at all.
Yeah, maybe he should do something like a bar or something.
He got a lot of comments, so he likes one of those ideas.
Yeah. Cool. The final top story is Operation Sailor. Oh yeah, we haven't had one of these in a while. This is from Pilar. 13,000 13,000 sats, 11 comments. Keon, what's this?
Yeah. So if anyone's familiar with Operation Sailor, Pillar back during the last bear cycle took out a loan in euros and bought Bitcoin with it, with the sort of as an experiment, and has been tracking the experiment ever since. And the kind of parameters of the project were that he take out a fiat loan. And then should he ever need to pay for the loan, and they install, I think it's a 10-year the term is 10 years. If he ever needed to pay for the loan, he would liquidate the Bitcoin that he bought on a monthly basis to pay the loan. And so given that he bought in the, not in the worst part in the bear market.
But at 40, right?
I think he, I don't, I think it was like 22.
He bought it at 22?
Yeah, he like dollar cost, or he monthly cost averaged in, I think is what he did over 6 months. And, you know, he's doing really well on that, on his Operation Sailor, the actual reality of it, he has made himself a decent amount of money. But he also goes through, he's also been tracking the alternative history of him buying during the worst time to buy rather than one of the better times to buy, and shows that for basically 4 years, he was the loan was underwater. And he ends up with a lot less Bitcoin than he actually did in reality. And so he just kind of models that. I think it's a nice balance to like if you were reading Operation Sailor before, it really didn't look good for a while, but more his last one seems really good. It's like, it was almost so good. The example might suggest you should take out a loan and buy Bitcoin today. But the alternative history presents here presents a nice balance where, you know, to a large extent, the experiment only turned out so well because his timing happened, you know, happened to be pretty good, by luck to some degree. And yeah, I think he models it. It says the alternative history, he's basically positive now 4 years later by a few sats, even though he was paying down the loan the entire time.
Wow.
So, While it still sort of broke even and potentially can still make him money even in the worst case scenario, it's still, you know, it most people probably would have had a hard time surviving those 4 years with like a negative balance sheet like that.
Yeah, he just had diamond hands.
Oh, well, that was an alternative history, so he didn't actually He actually did better than what I'm describing, because he's presenting a worst case scenario should he have made the mistake of buying it last cycle stop. And it's just like an interesting situation, because I know there are quite a few Bitcoiners. I run into them. I mean, that have taken out loans, gotten into debt, and like levered up to buy Bitcoin, and I mostly probably see the survivors, given that they're still in Bitcoin. But this is not something I would ever do. I'm terrified of debt, but it's cool. That's why it's especially cool for me to hear.
Cool. Yeah. That's all the top stories this week on Stacker News Live. Before we jump into your stories, I want to talk to G so we can talk about Alamo Labs. Is that okay?
Yeah.
G, do you want to come up here and talk about what we got going on tonight before it gets too late? So, G, we've had him on the show before. I think the last time we had him on was at TabConf last year. So, for the snackers at home, G is the guy who runs Alamo Labs along with Will. Dude, thanks for inviting us.
Of course, man.
I appreciate you extending your hospitality here for Stacker News Live. And, tell us about Alamo Labs and tell us about, like, what's going on tonight and what you're building here and... just tell us everything.
Newest Bitcoin hub on the scene, coming out of San Antonio, Texas, so hours south of Austin. Get a lot of inspiration from the Mecca, and we just want to champion the message down here. So nonprofit, 501c3, we're really, our foundation down here is education and empowering the locals. Nothing to sell, just Bitcoin only. So we have a pretty special team here. Everybody's starting to pick up the reins as far as different meetups, just getting more community involvement, like our meals tonight. Local business, Mark's Outing, gave us a hookup on some burgers and fries, so that'll be great. And just supporting local, man, doing right by your community. And I feel like God will bless us like that. He has blessed us. Now we're in the new Bitcoin hub. It's an honor to have Stacker News down here.
Yeah, dude.
Then
I'm surprised Keon came. I was like, when I asked him yesterday, he was like, no, I want to go check it out. I was like, really? He's like, yeah. I was like, oh, wow. So
yeah, tonight, a very special evening for us tonight. We'll be having Bitstein come out.
Yeah, that's big.
So that'll be great.
Can't wait for that conversation.
Yeah, excited for him to get down here. Couple other big time Bitcoin names down here tonight, so it's going to be great. I'm more excited for our community just to get this type of exposure. To anybody out there that runs meetups, I still remember, you know, a real big goal of mine was to bring the Bitcoin conference like to San Antonio. And over the years, you know, we've been blessed to have speakers that have spoke at the conference show up. You know, they get to practice some of their speeches here and everything.
Yeah.
So it's just been great, man. Just helping others.
Dude, when we pulled up, we saw the deck out here because you have like a nice, beautiful deck out there. And I was like, man, this spot is beautiful, man. Like, I love the gate. It has like a gate and everything, so you're protected. Has trees, so you don't have to worry about that. It's nice and remote. And like, it's just, there's a nice vibe. And then also when we came in, it's just so big. There's so many windows. All this light comes in. And then we were touring the space and I was just like, look at this beautiful kitchen. And then you got your own sound guy here with video. And
Shout out Beck.
Yeah, dude, everything's beautiful. Then you have like a whole studio back there in the back. And dude, it looks gorgeous in here, man. There's just so much room. You got like an eagle's nest up here too. It's just it's good, man. This is really good.
It's 2025, man. San Antonio is not playing this year. All right, we're coming. Yeah.
And then also too, I should mention, so the Spurs play which way? Is it that way? Or this way?
We're literally probably like 0.02 miles to the left.
So you literally could, just for all the Bitcoiners that are out there, this is the game plan for anybody who's all the stackers that are listening. You could buy tickets to a Spurs game this season and you could, you know, get a hotel. You could come to Alamo Labs pregame. Then you could go walk down to the stadium, watch the game, and then come to the after party because you'll be doing what's the plan for all the Spurs games?
I mean, the great thing about it is, you know, it's a walk right down the road right here. So plan to have some watch parties, you know, where the Spurs are all we got. They're all on our hearts here in San Antonio. So it's going to be cool, man. You have the option. Either you can hang out with Bitcoiners in here and watch the game in the Bitcoin hub of San Antonio, or you have the option to go and actually like really watch the game and get the experience while being down here, which we definitely, we push both options for real. But you know, if I'm going to be a true San Antonian, you definitely got to go to one game. And especially now that we got Wemby and yeah, it's an experience for sure.
Yeah.
The
stadium is beautiful here. I'm definitely going to come for a game or two for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, this massive TV, it's freaking huge, dude. This TV's freaking huge.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy.
A lot of things happening this year. We're really excited. I think the world will see what we got coming next. So
yeah. Yeah. It's great to be here. Thank you for extending the hospitality and, yeah, excited for tonight and excited for what you guys got going on. You even have like a lounge area over there too. So nice and comfortable.
A little lounge, a little play, but, at the end of the day, this is a spot to build, calling all Bitcoiners, anybody ever in Texas, got two citadels right next to each other now. So,
and I should also say it's a family affair too. I can see your mom over here. Hello, Mrs. G.
That's what we're all about, man. Family, Mrs. G's friends, mom. Close ones. Yeah, just blessed, man. Blessing all the Austin guys, Stacker News, Pleb Lab, and everybody that's come along with us here in San Antonio.
So. Yeah, it's all family and friends, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's get Keon back on the show.
Thanks.
No, thank you, G. It's awesome. Doing a good job, sir. Let's do your story here. It's how do you fight brain rot, Keon?
Yeah, South Korea LN just asked folks for their tips for fighting brain rot. Brain rot being the result of you in consuming a lot of low quality content online, you know, like short-lived, you know, high dopamine, repetitive stuff.
Oh yeah, that's pretty much Twitter, right?
I would say a lot of modern social media on the internet, or just things on the internet, are probably conducive to brain rot. Yeah. So he said that he himself he has an app called Self Control that makes, you know, prohibits him from doing brain rot activities. But he asked stackers what they do. And a lot of them said they don't have accounts on a lot of these websites that contribute to brain rot. Or they otherwise have like other practices, like Scoresby here says that he writes something every day.
I would get feed filter.
Oh, feed filter. Is it out?
Yeah, I've been using it for Twitter whenever I go on there.
Okay.
It works.
It works. All right. Yeah. To pull it, yeah, to make it faster. Yeah, absolutely. So G asked about whether we're all susceptible to brain rot, or it's like, you know, it's like part of us, the part of our brain that can get rotten. I would say so, yeah. I would say, and then a lot of these systems exploit it and make that part of your brain maybe more significant than it would otherwise be. Yeah, but I don't actually know much of the science behind brain rot. I think it's like mostly even Wikipedia calls it a colloquial term for just like the negative result of spending too much time on these like short form media things.
Cool.
Car uses feed filter.
The next one I wanted to bring up was mine. So OpenAI has lost over 25% of its key talent in the last 24 months. This was a PitchBook post. So I don't know if you saw this, but I was talking about it with Optimism.
I did see it.
Oh, okay, cool. So yeah, it's just really interesting. And a lot of people made a big deal about it because Meta is like trying to buy them out or buy out these key researchers in the team. Optimism dropped a really good article. I don't know if you read his, but his was really good. So he dropped this one and he said it might explain some of the churn. So this was from one of their key researchers. And he just went into explaining a little bit of like what was going on inside of OpenAI. If this is not ChatGPT, Keon, let's hope it's not. But let's just say hypothetically, this is not ChatGPT. This is actually like, real. This is like a real account of what it's like working at OpenAI. And I read through it all. It was like, it was really good. It read like a real testimonial of what it's like at working at OpenAI. If this is real, everything's run off of Slack, which is kind of interesting. The other thing I found out was like a lot of them are key researchers running their own teams. And from what it's described like is these key researchers are running their own team and they're basically told to go off and build and do these things. The other thing that's funny is that like when they were making their own, they called it like a codex or like a code. Maybe you know what it's called, but it's like this, this thing that was going to allow them to code faster. Where is it at?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I do know.
Oh, Codex. Okay. Yeah, Codex. So they were going to, for like 7 weeks, they were going to go on this sprint that he was a part of, and they're going to go and build really, really fast. And right after this sprint, they had to work like all day, basically what you work, which to me is like, we're so used to it. Like, it's just like not a really,
they're not founders. They're just,
well, that's what he said. Like, this is what basically Optimism was saying. He's like, he was basically where me and Optimism were talking about this. And Optimism said like turnover will stay high because you'll need some downtime after. And your next adrenaline rush. The difference with the entrepreneurs at Club Lab is that their own goals. This means you don't have to search for the next challenge given to you. You'll find your own. Thinking about it, this is maybe even a bigger contributor to the churn. And I was like, snap, you're probably right. Because they're not used to that. But in reality, though, that like that's how you make great things, though. Like you, like for me, like how else are you going to get to like building something exceptional? Like that's what made OpenAI OpenAI. Like, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but when I saw this, I was just like, it was really informative to me because he talked about other things about when he was there and like all the cool stuff that they have. And it kind of sounded really interesting because he said it's like it started at when it was at 1,000 people. And now it's at 3,000 people. and that Sam and all the people that are at the very top are really, really, really hands-on with the company. And I was like, wow, that's pretty fascinating, because a lot of people say terrible things. He also said that how, like, Twitter is at the top of their mind all the time, and like that's how they find out about a lot of the news, and they literally will pivot on a dime whenever they hear about what Meta's doing or Anthropic or some of these other big AI companies, and they'll just move on a dime. And that's what he loves that about. He loved that about OpenAI.
Hmm.
So really fascinating post. I would definitely read what Optimism shared here. But overall, I wanted to ask you, Keon, like, what do you think about all these people? Do you agree with what Optimism said? Do you think that's why they're losing so many of their research people and their leadership staff, because they're technically already running a mini startup inside of OpenAI?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they could be losing people due to burnout. If they're not, if the culture is maybe creating lots of burnout, that could be a thing. Another thing could be that Meta has a more open source model, that they might be attracted to that they get to share more of their research. And that, especially for a researcher, that is a huge motivation, is to kind of improve the world broadly rather than improve the shareholders' position of OpenAI. And so I imagine that could draw them to Meta. And I imagine the culture at Meta, I imagine, you know, Meta's been around for a very long time relative to OpenAI. So I imagine they have tons of like perks and things that really sweeten the deal for all kinds of employees, not just the AI people, but they have a huge team that they've been managing for a long time. And I suspect they're very good at doing it.
And they don't feel so like it's all on them to run these small little.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably high-performance teams, basically.
Yeah, it's like if they actually are giving them more money. We have a little bit of feedback in the... I don't know if that other microphone is hot. Yeah, I think that, you know, they could be paying them more. I actually saw an interesting... Because I first heard about this when Sam Altman went on a podcast, and he was talking about how they're offering some of his researchers $10 million a year, or just a $10 million signing bonus to leave and come to Meta. And actually a local here in San Antonio, Bill Gurley, I saw him on Twitter. And he wrote that, it could be like 4D chess. And what could actually be going on is Sam Altman is going on these podcasts saying that his researchers are getting offered $10 million signing bonuses because other researchers that are considering leaving for Meta, they'll go to Meta and Meta won't offer them a $10 million signing bonus. And they'll feel like they're getting like shortchanged, and they'll stay at OpenAI. That was like he's like, this might be 4D chess by Sam Altman, and there might not actually be that many researchers leaving and getting paid that much. He might just be
getting ahead of it,
attempting to like,
I could see that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's YC, so he would know how to do that.
Yeah. He might be trying to like, stop the bleeding by creating, the idea that
for the open market.
Yeah, that's what
Jobs and Adobe did, right?
Well, I don't know
back then.
Yeah, I don't know much about that, but I think that's plausible too. But according to this research report, if that number is true, 25% of its key research talent. But the other thing is like there's a lot more AI companies now. You know, certainly more than the number of AI companies and the opportunities has grown more than 25%.
I think you're probably more right on the what you said earlier about just Meta being a little bit more
chill,
been there, done that. They have a little bit more things that are just a little bit more, you know, stationed out. A lot of what OpenAI is doing is relatively new, right? Like Slack sounds like a terrible thing to run an entire organization that's worth billions. I mean, it could be, that could all be fake, but let's just take it at face value.
What would you use?
No, but I'm not running OpenAI. I'm just saying like a lot of it sounds completely like crazy, right? It sounds like craziness going on. But if you're Zuck and you're like out there, you know, telling these guys, you're offering these all this outrageous amount of fiat, you are kind of probably giving them a way better deal with a lot more stability, and you're not basically telling them to run a startup within a startup, basically. Which for them, all they want is just some stability. So
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure they do want. So I think they're this is like a bit of a pendulum swing that a lot of people go through in their careers where they go to a startup, they get kind of burned out. Their next move is to go on a chill vacation job, but then they get super disappointed in how slow moving the chill vacation job is. And they're not as effective. They're not making as much impact. They actually feel worse about their overall standing.
But it's saying right here, they're literally losing 25%.
Yeah, because I think that's especially a lot of these researchers have been in their first job outside of academia. Then, yeah, this is then they're like, wow, this is too much. And then they're going to go somewhere like Meta, which is this huge, you know, basically this sort of like legacy company at this point.
I also said on the Stacker News post that I do think that OpenAI will still grab all the research, you know, the graduates and the you know, from the, you know, just from all the top colleges and universities around the world. Like, they're going to grab those people easily, because if you're coming out of these places, like, you're going to want to go work for OpenAI. That's going to set you up for life. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to want to go to Meta.
I don't know if it would set you up for life anymore. Maybe it would if you, but I think their valuation is already high. So you're coming in, you know, several years into the startup. So you're, you know, whatever.
Well, not several years, technically like 2 years, right?
Yeah. Well, but that's a couple years. The comp package is probably not it. You know, you might, maybe there's a lot more upside, but they're already worth like, I think $1 trillion or something.
Yeah.
So you might get a 10x on your equity, and let's say maybe you get a couple hundred grand. Yeah. So you could, you know, you stay for a good 4 years. You could maybe end up a millionaire, or maybe another company comes out, or maybe Meta, you know, takes enough talent that they build a better AI and a better model, and they, you know,
what would you do?
Doesn't
what become would that you valuable. Do if you were in that position?
I go to work at a startup, an AI startup.
So you would be a part of the smaller 25%. Companies.
No, I wouldn't go to Meta. I don't know if that 25% was people going to Meta, but I would not have started at OpenAI to begin with. Maybe, well, unless I'd been there since it was younger.
Because you don't like Sam Altman?
No, just because of the size. I would prefer smaller size, smaller team, more impact, more responsibility, more diverse skill set development.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Good talk.
All right.
I think that's all we got except for Meta. Let's go into actual Meta for sure.
Yeah, we released a small release. We now do live comments and comment threads. So if you're like if you're doing an AMA, you're like hosting the AMA, you'll see new questions as they come in now.
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah. Well, if you stay on that page, I can make it show up for you.
Let me see. Still haven't seen it. Show me
the money. Okay,
let me hit reply.
All right, don't go anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere.
Let's
see if it works.
It should. There you go. One new comment. You see there at the top. See it at the top below. Really?
Oh, right here. Yeah. Oh, I thought it was coming down here. Yeah. So when I clicked that, still haven't seen it. Hey, car. Oh,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I thought it was coming below.
Well, it's not going to, we don't want to shift around the page. We're going to
what happens if I do this? Hey, you were on SNL right now. Where you at? Let's see if that works. Where does it come out now?
Well, it's going to come out for me, not you.
So does it show the comment again or no?
Here we go. So see, I get an indicator here.
Oh, you get it down there? Where do I get it?
You don't get it because it was your comments. You don't need it.
Okay, so reply back. Where do I get it though?
Oh, I'll give you. Okay, I'll give you.
So if I get into like a heated battle on Stacker News, where do I get it? So where does it come out now?
All right, you'll see it here in a sec.
Oh, that's cool. Show all comments. Oh, boss. So what happens if I do this? If I do Zap, do you see the Zap? Does the Zap come in like that too?
It's live comments, not live.
We should do live Zaps too.
Yeah, but live Zaps are more tricky than you might imagine.
Oh, yeah, because of all the...
Well, because like part of the feedback mechanism of you zapping is that you see the Sats change. But if those change dynamically, that is not a...
Stretch goes all. Stretch goes all, I'm saying. Stretch goal.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, that's kind of what's going on. We'll make it a little We have plans to make it a lot better.
Who did that? Sox did that?
Yeah, Sox did the work on that.
Sox is killing it, man.
He really is.
I like Sox.
A lot of the work he was doing behind the scenes, he was working on something really hard, and that is, he pretty much completed that work.
Good job, Sox.
We haven't released that yet, but we plan to soon.
Ever since me and EK and Sox went to go eat sushi, I feel like I got to know him really well.
Oh, did you get sushi with Sox?
Yeah, it was fun. We literally almost puked because we ate so much sushi.
Oh, that's good.
That was fun.
Yeah. Then EK fixed a bunch of stuff with the Wallet V2 release that happened last week.
Dude, the wallets look good.
Yeah, they're better.
I still haven't fixed my thing. Yeah, I'll fix it, EK.
He has big plans for that too. But that's it. That's the release.
Cool stuff. What else do we got? Oh, hang on. Let me go back. I think that's everything. It's been a long show.
It has been a long show. You seem kind of in your head after the David Bailey stuff.
No, I'm just trying to get through the show because I know we got to set up for G's thing. So we have no zine this week because I think.
No, we have a zine.
We do?
Well, we don't have.
Did she release it?
We don't have Flatpoint. Yeah, it's on the front page.
It is. Okay, let's just cover it real quick.
Nakamoto right at the top.
Oh, Nakamoto. So we got another zine. Shout out to Plip Poet. Check it out there. Oh, that looks cool. Look at that. How Sammy. Did you get the hat in there?
You got Sammy the Skeleton.
You got Hammy there? Sammy,
not Hammy.
So for the Stackers at home, Sammy was living with me for about 3 months.
It was
one of the best.
Kidnapped him.
No, he was living with me for 3 months. So that skeleton right there was living with me for 3 months. It was awesome. We shared a lot together. And then Keon.
Cheated on me.
Keon literally took him from my life and hasn't been the same since.
So anyway,
it's okay.
Sam, if you go down, you can see Tammy is.
Whoa, what's that, bro?
Yeah.
You got him in a relationship now?
Yeah. So, Sam,
this is not right.
That's Sammy's wife, Tammy the torso. Dude,
this is weird.
Sammy the skeleton and Tammy the torso. See,
he's like gone off the deep end ever since. See, he went from.
This is their wedding reception.
He went from being really cool, living with Carr, to now he's doing some other weird shit with a Viking chick.
He deserves love, Carr. Or death. I don't know.
He's doing some weird stuff, bro.
Oh, skeleton.
Sammy, I miss you. All right. I got that. And then we're going to go into the fountain boost. Do we get any fountain boost? Let's see here. Let's see. I think we got, we got three. Zap from Blockchain Boog. Pomsicle said Austin is the San Francisco of Texas.
Is that an insult, though? Huh? Is that an insult calling Austin the San Francisco of Texas?
Everybody says that, but honestly, like San Francisco is San Francisco and Austin is Austin. So Austin's just weird, bro.
All right.
I was in.
You don't even.
Yeah, like, Austin's just Austin. Austin's just weird. And then Gray Root, right, G? Like, what would you say Austin is? It's just weird. Yeah, it's just a weird
San Francisco
place.
Is kind of weird, too.
No, San Francisco is just San Francisco. We're not. Austin's. That's the thing. Austin's not trying to be anything other than Austin. And I think people think, like, Austin's trying to be San Francisco, but it's not. It's just weird.
All right.
Gray Undisciplined said Gray Ruby is his real name. His mom gave all of her kids boat names. Wait, what does that mean? So is Gray Ruby his boat name?
Yeah, I think it's just I think Undisciplined is having a laugh.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that's hilarious, though. Because it does sound like a boat name.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Then we go to... I think that's all we got. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't think I have any plans at all, except normal stuff like work. I guess I'll be fielding criticisms for how I let David Bailey talk, or something. I don't know. I don't know what kind of shit I'll get, but
wow, dang, dude, I'm not expecting any.
Well, fortunately,
like, at all.
Yeah, we have an audience captive here, and that's about as much audience as the podcast gets.
Because I don't care. So that's one, and then I'm actually going to take the day off tomorrow to read that 37 Signals book because we're putting together the product. Stuff for the curriculum for startup school. Oh, so I got to do that. So I got to read that book. And then I got to read like 12 chapters of another book somebody recommended. And then there's like this
speed reading.
Yeah, I got to do. And then there's like this Harvard thing that somebody sent me this YouTube video. So I got to look at that. And then pretty much going to do that. And then I want to see a movie on Sunday, but I don't know if I'll be able to.
What's out right now? Have you seen that movie Friendship?
I haven't seen any movies, dude. Oh, Friendship. That's a creepy movie.
Yeah, I like it. I like that guy, though.
Did you see it?
No, but I'm wanting to see it.
Yeah, that looks good. Yeah, that looks super creepy, though. I wonder what happens at the end.
Yeah, he has that show on Netflix. You haven't seen his show?
No.
That dude show? It's a good show. You might not like it. It's a bit avant-garde in terms of comedy, but my wife loves that guy.
She likes it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Keon.
Snap.